There's this old internet fable about a duck who liked milkshakes. Everyone loved the milkshake duck until it turned out to be racist. The moral of the story is that everything online either turns to caca or we learn it always was. The latest example we submit is the so-called food media, or at least its most prominent avatar.
Adam Rappaport, the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine, has resigned amid questions about equality within the company. This after several employees with Bon Appetit spoke out saying the magazine is not inclusive and does not treat minorities equally.
Adam Rappaport departed the scene last Monday after weeks of furious attention to systemic racial inequality nationwide, and after a month of similar scrutiny within the food media, beginning last month with the tumble of viral recipe author Alison Roman. It was around then that technology and culture writer Navneet Alang wrote an essay for Eater called Stewed Awakening, Alison Roman, Bon Appetit, and the Global Pantry Problem. We asked him to describe the impact of Bon Appetit in the before times.
So about a decade ago, Bon Appetit was a slightly stuffy food magazine. But over the last few years, Bon Appetit has developed a YouTube channel.
Hey guys, it's Carla. I'm here in the Bon Appetit test kitchen today.
Hey guys, then it's live. We're going to be making gravlax or lox. It's a nice cured salmon that we're going to
slice. Hi everyone, I'm Claire. We are here in the BA test kitchen. And today
now it has over 6 million subscribers. The videos have been viewed over a billion times. Maybe most significantly, there is kind of this cult of personality that developed around the hosts of Bon Appetit's test kitchen. That was like the arena where they demonstrate their recipes. There are entire Instagram accounts dedicated to, you know, one of the hosts' hairstyle. That was Claire Saffitz. Mm-hmm. You know, like people would talk about whether or not, you know, the hosts have crushes on each other. So it became this kind of cultural phenomenon. But because of that, Bon Appetit also became this sort of authority in the food world more generally. You know, because they had such a big audience and they had such an almost kind of an outsized impact, if Bon Appetit was making a particular kind of dish or using a particular kind of ingredient, then it meant that, you know, that had really kind of hit the American mainstream.
How would you describe these minor cult figures or major cult figures of food?
Generally speaking, they're sort of young-ish. There's sort of a chill, collegial vibe between the hosts.
Half, oh my God, Claire, it's perfect. Half sour Claire. Oh my God, it's perfect, Claire. Half sour Saffitz. This is how things happen, organically.
Generally kind of conventionally attractive, like, you know, they look good on camera. But also, the longer you watch Bon Appetit, the more difficult it becomes to ignore that most of them are white.
But despite the incredible impact of Bon Appetit, there have been other figures, most notably for our conversation, Alison Roman.
I'm Alison Roman, and I am making a salted butter chocolate chunk shortbread cookie, also known to some of you as the cookies. You gave it that name, not me. So this is a recipe.
She was popular before COVID, and then she became the, quote, prom queen of the pandemic. Why was she such a hit?
A couple of reasons. One is that her style of cooking was very much focused on pantry ingredients.
Here's the thing. Through a hilarious mishap, we had an abundance of shallots, an extraordinary amount of shallots. How will I possibly eat all those shallots? And I was like, well, I guess this anchovy pasta is now really a shallot pasta. But in the end, I was like, damn, that is so delicious. Are you following? Is this confusing?
The kind of stuff that you have lying at the back of your cupboard. So when we were all kind of stuck at home, and you know, many of us still are, that kind of cooking was the right sort of style of cooking for the right moment. The other reason was that Alison Roman has a very kind of accessible approach to cooking.
The best part about this whole dish is you take half of that mixture and you put it in a jar or a container, whatever, and you use it later for like a million other things. And it's going to make your life so good. Like for no, like just by having this in your fridge, you are going to like get a promotion. You're going to like, I don't know, find a parking spot immediately. Like it's going to just improve the quality of your life 20-fold. I promise you.
Let's talk a little bit about her recipes.
Alison Roman is sort of one of the first people to have viral recipes, period. 2 or 3 years ago, the idea of a recipe going viral seemed a little bit strange. But one of the recipes that did go viral was something called the stew, or hashtag the stew.
If I search the stew, look at this. Allison, she's done it again.
837 comments. And they're talking about how they added, I don't know, cashews or leaving out mint and yogurt. I don't know why you would do that.
There are infinite variations of this dish. Today we're making it my way, but I'm sure Allison would approve.
And it was controversial.
Which is a very strange thing to happen to a stew. Some people argued it was basically a curry. It was chickpeas, coconut milk, and turmeric. It started to become a little bit controversial, particularly among, say, you know, people of South Asian background or people of color generally, because there was this sense that, well, why has this suddenly become so popular? Why did it take Allison Roman to make, you know, a quite ordinary, easy recipe become so popular and so viral? Curries aren't exactly obscure, right? So there was this sort of sense of frustration that not only did it take sort of a white media personality to popularize this, but that all of the people of color that have been toiling away in restaurants or trying to get gigs at media companies ended up being kind of pushed to the side or ignored in the process.
She said last October to Jezebel, "Y'all, this is not a curry. I never made a curry. I don't come from a culture that knows about curry. I come from no culture. I have no culture. I'm like vaguely European." This strikes me as an attempt to say, look, I'm not trying to commandeer anybody else's culture. It also suggests that she sees herself as kind of a default non-culture. In other words, the default culture.
Yeah, I think a good example of that is the way that, you know, we use, even I sometimes use this term that, you know, we talk about ethnic cuisine. Technically, all cuisine is ethnic in some fashion. And so what I think that Allison Roman may have been doing was she was just sort of trying to say, look, I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes. In the process of doing that, I think that what she did was disavowed the way that a white majority will often sort of assume that they are the default of all things. And that anything that doesn't have a particular label or a name just ends up being white. And so the stew, for example, I suspect that if a South Asian cook had put that recipe out into the world, they would have called it, you know, a chickpea curry.
But maybe, do you think this would have blown over if Allison Roman hadn't, in comments to the New Consumer last month, disparaged Marie Kondo and Chrissy Teigen, neither of whom are white? The rest seems to be food media history.
Cookbook author and New York Times food columnist Allison Roman coming for Teigen's success. What Chrissy Teigen has done is so crazy to me. Now she has an Instagram page that has over 1 million followers where it's just like people running a content farm for her. That horrifies me, and it's not something that I ever want to do. The backlash to Roman's criticism swift. Chef Sonny Anderson on Instagram summing up what so many felt online, saying, "Let me know if you need me to side-eye any privileged cookbook authors acting like the way they make their pennies is better than the way you make your dollars."
Her column in the Times was suspended, they say temporarily, but...
I think that we'll have to see what will happen to Allison Roman in the future, because there is a sense that the outrage at Allison Roman wasn't just about that interview. It had also been bubbling for quite a while, then it found its outlet or its focal point.
You wrote about whiteness in food media and how, even as American pantries appear to be more global than ever before, our food media are still primarily white people telling other white people how to cook. This, as you say, is another reckoning, and one reason why we brought up Bon Appetit and Allison Roman's contretemps is because this sort of thing isn't limited to just what we consume as culture and food consumers. This can go right to the workplace, right? In the case of Bon Appetit, the people of color on the staff were exploited and treated terribly. There was a montage that emerged this past week showing Sola Elwaili, one of the very few people of color to appear in the test kitchen, just being pulled right, left, and center by her largely clueless white colleagues. ones that she's claimed are being paid very much more than she is.
Sola, do you have a minute?
Sola, do you have a minute?
Sola, when you have a minute, you want to talk sugar?
Hey, Sola, can I ask you a question about technique real quick?
Turmeric? Hey, Sola, how do you say turmeric?
Do you think I need to toast my spices first?
Dosa, what's dosa, Sola?
My reaction to that was that it was a little bit enraging. A, it sort of felt profoundly unfair. But B, I think one of the reasons that it made me sort of angry and made so many people that I know angry is that it felt somewhat familiar. That feeling of having one's sort of knowledge or expertise called upon or relied upon, but that you're not compensated in a commensurate way. It seemed to me to be sort of reflective of the way in which media generally tends to kind of push people of color aside, but also to call upon them to sort of do the things that need doing while the spotlight, I think, gets shone on often kind of white personalities.
Mm-hmm. There was a revealing piece in the San Francisco Chronicle by food critic Soleil Ho. She observed in Bon Appetit's work that there were ingredients and techniques that its stars and writers thought they needed to explain to their audience, and there were ones they didn't. Those editorial choices appeared to be based on the assumption that the viewer, the reader, is white. That turns out to be a pretty sloppy assumption with some devastating consequences, right?
When you assume that your audience is white, and you're introducing some new ingredient or new technique or some new aspect of culture that a white majority might not be familiar with, you end up sort of reinforcing the idea that the mainstream itself and mainstream culture is always somehow defined as white, which, speaking as a person of color, can end up being quite frustrating. One is born into Western culture, and you want yourself to be reflected in the mainstream, not just someone who looks like you, but someone who knows the things that you do, someone who has some of the same sort of cultural knowledge that you do.
But you were a Bon Appetit Test Kitchen fan, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Watching food videos on YouTube is one of the ways that I relax, and Bon Appetit was fun, you know, because of the way that the hosts would often kind of interact with one another. There was this assumption that they were people who got along. And I think that that illusion has been shattered now.
You mentioned earlier that this is a moment across the culture to reckon with the marginalizing of particularly African Americans and their unequal treatment with regard to everything from pay to environmental conditions to criminal justice, certainly, and I could go on and on, everything, essentially. What do you think the significance is of food in this moment?
Food, I think, is the most obvious and most kind of everyday way in which we interact with different cultures. You know, it's potentially a very superficial interaction with other cultures. You can just, you know, pop in and get a bowl of ramen somewhere and never think about anything ever again. But it's also a potential avenue to think about those cultures. So I think this particular moment in food media, I hope that it reveals or leads to perhaps a sort of a slightly more explicit politicization of food, and not in a negative way. I wouldn't want food to be politicized in a way that felt like a drag, basically, mm-hmm. but in a way that acknowledged where food fits into culture and where different cultures fit into American culture more generally. The other thing that it makes me think is that the reason that these questions are so important in media is because it isn't just a question of workplace equity, but it's, you know, the media is sort of the lens through which a particular kind of reality gets reflected and then gets amplified to, you know, the public more generally. And so I think that an acknowledgement of race, of racism, and the long history of those things is obviously something that needs to be confronted head on. And I think, hopefully, we're at a moment in history when those things are finally starting to be recognized.
And food is a very accessible place to begin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone has to cook, particularly when you're stuck at home. So,
what are you cooking these days?
I've actually been staying with my parents a lot. I have elderly parents that I have been trying to kind of help out. And maybe as a result of that, I have been cooking a lot of Indian food, particularly the Punjabi food that I have grown up with. So I've been learning to try and figure out which spices go with which vegetables or which dishes.
I hear that turmeric is the next big thing.
Yes, I've used it once or twice in my life.
Navneet Alang is a technology and culture writer. His essay for Eater is titled Stewed Awakening, Alison Roman, Bon Appetit, and the Global Pantry Problem. Thanks for listening to this podcast extra. You can check out the big show on Friday. I'm Brooke Gladstone.